You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, I'm Captain Dean, and welcome back to another episode. This one being recorded on location at Mellow Matt's Music and More, the premier music store of Bowling Green, Kentucky, because Matt's awesome. And every time I say that, he pays me money. And that is a joke, because he does not. But I am here today with Dr. Tom Hunley, and the Mini-Me's are here as well. But Dr. Tom, we're going to start with you. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Dean.
And we'll start off with the common, always beginning question of where are you from?
I'm from Seattle. The boys are from Bowling Green, but I grew up around Seattle.
That's awesome.
Grunge was the thing when I was in college. I got to see a lot of the bands you've heard of for $5 or under, you know, in small clubs.
Please go into detail on that.
Let's see. I saw Mudhoney for free, Soundgarden. A lot of the bands that I liked, you know.
So late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of the bands I liked were headlining around Seattle and maybe didn't quite get signed or aren't as famous as the other ones.
That's crazy.
And I think I might have gone to a Nirvana show and not known who they were and walked out before they played. You know, I'm not 100% sure.
Well, that's cool. That's a hell of a story to have right in its own right.
My wife, my future wife at that time, she got crowd passed at one of their video shoots.
Oh, wow. That's great. But you saw a lot of the stuff that a lot of us around here just were enamored with. Like, we wanted to be those bands, but you actually got to physically be there.
I was enamored by it too, and I was the only one that I knew that wasn't in a band, you know.
Yeah.
I was really into poetry then, which for a living, you know, I teach poetry. I'm real jealous of my sons here starting out at their age, because I didn't start playing until I was 40.
Well, don't be jealous, because you've done the right thing.
I'm real proud of them, and I'm glad that I was able to help them get started.
Absolutely. But going back to your growing up, you were born in Seattle, raised in Seattle?
I was actually born in northern Indiana, moved to Seattle when
I
was six, moved to the Seattle suburbs.
So you're kind of from this area, but you ended up out west.
Yeah, right. Part of me's from there.
What got you into music, and how old were you, and what led you down that path?
Yeah, so I mean, I was into listening to music from my teenage years. You know, I hung out with bands and everything. I took some guitar lessons here and there and kept, you know, getting frustrated and quitting. So I didn't really start playing until I was 40, but I'd always wanted to.
Wow, really? Wow, that's an interesting thing. So it was always there, you just didn't pursue it.
That's right. I mean, I got distracted by a lot of other things.
Well, obviously, like you said, you are a doctor.
Right.
And
that takes up a lot of time.
Do
and
people
energy.
Come up to you all the time and go, "Will you take a look at this real quick?
Yeah.
Tell me what this is." And you go, no, I'm not that kind of doctor.
Yeah, my dad doctor joke is that, you know, I'm in a theater and somebody has a heart attack and somebody says, "Is there a doctor in the house?" And I say, "I'm a doctor." And then they find out what kind. I'm like, well, I resent that.
But what are you a doctor of?
I'm a doctor of English.
Really?
English, creative writing,
really,
and literature.
Cool. Dr. English. It's better than the police on the grammar police for social media, right?
That's part of what I do.
But that's what you do. That's what you've done for a long time. That was your passion.
Yeah, I teach poetry writing, and I got interested in poetry at age 18.
Right.
And so everybody around me was.
You've had a lot of publications done. You've books, and I know a little bit about it.
Yeah.
But go into detail about what you've done,
sure.
The things you've accomplished in that world.
I wrote a whole book of poems in the voice of characters from The Simpsons.
Interesting.
I got another book. It's 48 different poems, 49 poems about different ways I might die. That's the most recent one. It's called Here Lies.
Kind of like the 1001 ways to die or something.
You write that song, which is fun, but so I don't know. I got a bunch of books of poems and a couple of textbooks.
But you are... You are, would it be a professor? Is that the right word to put?
Yeah, okay. I'm a full professor.
You're
WKU.
A professor at WKU.
Mm-hmm.
So on a local connection, that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, when you're on Western's campus, there's a lot of great music involvement up there. We're jumping around a bit, but it doesn't matter. How long have you been there, and what have you got to witness and see, musically speaking, being that you do work at Western?
I'm about to start my 17th year at WKU.
Wow.
Every year there's something called the Potter College Arts and Letters Fall Festival.
Yes.
And they let me headline that.
Yes.
Even though they got, you know, a lot of music majors performing and dance majors and so on. When I had a grown-up bands, the whole band would play, but now it's just me playing solo as of last year, because the boys don't have a WKU connection yet, but we're still
together.
Well,
they kind of do through you.
If they're still together, if they go to college and we're still together, we'll get to play that festival.
Yeah. So 17 years at Western as a professor. How did you end up back here? If you went from Indiana to Washington, how did you end up back here?
I was actually in Tallahassee getting a PhD at Florida State.
Interesting.
And I applied to 75 universities, and I was ready to go anywhere. So it was luck, and it's been great here.
Yeah, I guess so. Obviously, you're as happy as anyone else around here. Being that you are at Western and involved for almost 20 years now, have you got to witness a lot of concerts or bands that would play like the coffee houses? And I mean, did you catch a lot of stuff maybe, or did you go
I've seen a lot of local music. I don't know about, not so much on campus.
Like South Lawn shows and night class.
Some of them. I mean, I remember seeing Heron and Crane perform right before a football game one time on the lawn.
And David's standing right over there. He's famous. But that's obvious. I would think that you would catch a lot of that. But then again,
there was an Earth Day concert. I remember.
You're a husband, a father.
Yeah.
You've got a life. Right. You know, you can't just hang out at work all day because there's a concert going on.
The first band I was in played Earth Day.
Yeah.
It was a Celtic folk band called Water Sprite.
That's cool.
They're still around, but you know, I just played four shows of them. One of them was an Earth Day on campus.
Cool. Well, you go back a little bit again on, you said that you didn't start playing guitar until you were 40.
I started playing bass when I was 40. I started playing guitar when I was like 44.
Okay, so you grew up as a fan of music. Obviously, you went to see a lot of great shows and great bands. What influenced you, and what finally was the thing that made you say, I'm going to do this?
Right, good question. I think what finally was, it was turning 40 and saying, I don't want to spend the rest of my life not being a musician. I've always kind of wanted to be one, you know.
Some people buy a red sports car.
That's right.
Dye their hair.
Some people have an affair. I didn't do that.
Well, there you go. Rock and roll saved your life. But that's cool. That makes sense to me. I talked to someone else recently that kind of had the same story. They're like, you know, they woke up one day and they're like 35 and like, I've always wanted to do this. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So you kind of had that too.
Yeah. And I had people tell me, you can't do that. You know, the receptors in your brain close up, you know, your brain. And you know, it's probably harder. It's probably been harder for me to learn. And so I'm probably slower at learning than I would be if I was.
But I mean,
16.
Are you self-taught? You said you took lessons early.
I have taken quite a few lessons. So I go back and forth between trying to learn from books and trying to learn from people.
What was the real thing that really pushed you in that direction to do this, though? Musically speaking, what influenced you?
You know what? It might have been just the local scene. I was going at that time to a lot of Black Shade shows. They were really big. And and Aaron, Chuck Falcon was really supportive of me. You know, I'd been playing for a year and a half or so, and this big local rock star invited me to come over and jam, you know.
That'd be like 2008, 2010, something like that.
Probably about 2010 or 11 by the time we played together. We just jammed at his place, and you know, I knew just a couple songs, and he played them with me, and that was a big boost to, you know, me. He was really encouraging. And there are other local musicians, Stephen Gordon, Chris Rutledge, Jared McKinney, you know, all those guys in the cartoons. People were just really really kind, you know. I mean, they knew I was just getting going, and they were real supportive.
Which had to be really good, because a lot of them, you know, I think in the 80s when I was a kid, there were a lot of the jerks.
Is that right?
That were like, get out of here, I'm better than you kind of mentality. But it seems like the tide changed a little bit, and people were more accepting and more inspiration, you know, driven, I think, to help other people out.
I found that in Bowling Green anyway.
Yeah, because the art scene and the music scene and even like what your specialty in poetry, there was a big thing at one point in this town where that was a big deal. A lot of the coffee shops had poetry readings and art shows. We have a lot of the art things. It all really connects now.
By the way, I don't know if you've been to Little Fox Bakery once a month. They got a band or two with some poets. So they're combining poetry and music.
I haven't been there for that. I went to a few concerts, but not the poetry thing yet.
They're starting to mix it up. Sometimes it's only music, but sometimes it's poets and music. We're actually playing there on September 7 with a rapper named Flash Mystic, and then Solar Disco Force.
Oh, great. I just saw them the other night. They're absolutely fantastic. Yeah. As we are speaking, they just released their second album, and it's out of this world.
Produced by the same people that did ours.
Yes, and that would be?
Nightmare House, Jared McKinney.
That's right. And before we get into modern day, we got to kind of cover the grounds that when you started playing, you started off on bass.
Yes.
And what did you do? What was the first thing you got into?
Well, I played a few shows with a Celtic folk band at Water Sprite. I remember they did Whiskey in the Jar, and I went and learned it the Thin Lizzy way and showed up with it, and they were like, no, you can't just start banging like that, you know. So during the shows, you know, I mean, I was going Route 5, and, you know, it was awesome they let me play with them because I was a pretty new musician, but, I mean, I wanted to rock, you know, so I started a band called Manly Pointer.
Okay.
I was the bass player and the male vocalist. We had a female vocalist and guitar player, my friend Morgan. We still get played on 91.7 on occasion. Our big song was "Get Out of My Car."
I know that song.
Kind of a goofy,
I didn't realize that was you.
Yeah,
that's cool because I listen to Revolution all the time. How long did that last?
I don't know, 2 or 3 years. We were down in 2014.
Okay. So then I started, not too long ago, but about 5 years ago.
Then I started playing with the cartoons as a side project. We were Dr. Tom and the cartoons.
No kidding.
We did Tinballs, Rockies. Our biggest show was our Revolution had a battle of the bands.
Yeah.
The winners would play at, what's it called, the festival in the spring?
Oh, RevFest?
Possibly the other one, Mayhem.
Mayhem.
Yes, they stopped doing this.
They used to have a Rev Fest, but yeah.
I think they used to pick one of the Mayhem bands in this Battle of the Bands, so we played in it 1 year, and that was pretty awesome. Biggest crowd I'd played for, except one time the Mini-Me's and I played their school talent show. That was the biggest crowd I ever had, actually.
That's great.
We did Smells Like Teen Spirit in front of 400 kids and parents and teachers.
And it literally smelled like Teen Spirit in the audience that day. coming out of that band in 2014... which is kind of amazing since it wasn't that long ago. I kind of met you around this time.
Yeah.
I started bumping into you.
I played a few shows with a band that I put together called Night of the Living Dead Poet Society.
Yes. And I remember I caught you guys at Western. You were in front of the Fine Arts Center. Okay.
I was like, that's that Potter College Fall Festival.
Walked up to it out of the blue and was like, hey, there's a band playing. And it was you.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really good band.
Thanks.
And it seemed to last for a little bit.
Right. The drummer, Rebecca, was a colleague of mine. And mm-hmm. she's from L.A. and she moved back. She left the job. Meanwhile, Colton Turley was the bass player. And he's gone on to greatness with The Rift.
That's right. He has gone on to... The Rift is a great band.
Yeah, Colton is a great bass player.
Yeah, and I interviewed Kai Rogers not that long ago.
Yeah,
cool to get the story about how those guys all got together. But that would have been around the same time of that band happening that he would have gotten hooked up with those guys, right?
Right.
That's pretty cool. So you do that for a little bit, and then I know you've done some like solo stuff, right? Give or take. I mean,
I play the fall festival on my own now,
right.
You know, and I do a lot of open mic, you know, every time I learn, get a song down, I want to take it to open mic, you know,
right.
In front of somebody.
But you're very driven. You're very active. You try to do as much as you can, as much as time allows.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I try, but I do have a lot of responsibilities. And also the older I get, the harder it is to stay up late for some of that stuff.
That's right, kids. And you'll find out that on your own. But it's not a bad thing. You can juggle it and then make it work. But that is that really sums up a lot about you in the interesting short time span that you've achieved all that stuff. Some cool bands, a lot of music, and a lot of great people you've got to work beside and work with on and off stage. Looking back on all of that, I mean, what's your thoughts on how you kind of got into the music scene and was accepted into it? You know,
right,
it's kinda
cool. It's been really great for me. I mean, you know, it's a... I was old enough to know that it wasn't something I was going to do for a living, you know.
Right.
I had my job, so I can, you know, I start out with, even if a 16-year-old was way better than me, he had a Squire and I had Gibson, you know.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
but anyway, I mean, so I don't know. I didn't have to be a starving artist, although I was a starving poet at one time, so I know what that's like. I don't know, so I just went into it for fun, you know, and it's continued to be fun. It got kind of frustrating trying to schedule, work out everybody's schedules and keep a band together, you know.
Of course.
So, I mean, that's when it occurred to me I just need to grow my own rhythm section.
And that you did. Real quick, though, I want to ask you this because this... lyrics and stuff, singing, that's all new to me. Obviously, I've been a musician most of my life, but being a lead singer, being a primary songwriter of a band, I was never a poet. Never, like, I've read some stuff, but I never could write it. Never even tried to, really. But I can write lyrics pretty good, and I'm pretty proud of that. I'm assuming the poetry part of your life plays a big role in the songwriting part.
It definitely does, but it's definitely different also, you know, because, like, most poems don't have a refrain or chorus, for example, you know. And I just...
But you're good with words.
I am good with words.
That's
the thing.
Phrasing and...
It's the thing I feel like I'm best at even here, and I do best with the songs when I think them as poems that have some, you know, music along with them. Although it takes me a lot longer to write a song because of the musical part, you know, coming up with the intro, the outro, the, you know, the hook, you know, the verse and the chorus, the bridge.
But, you know, you're kind of doing it your own way because, in a way, you're self-taught, so to speak.
To a certain degree,
like you said, you had lessons, but nobody ever...
Well, honestly, I got to give credit to Jordan Weiss. He's taught me a lot about guitar. So right. Other people have too. Chuck Falcon and Jared McKinney are guys that both taught me. I took lessons from them. Kind of
these are
informally.
Great people to learn from.
But Blake here takes bass lessons from Jordan Weiss, and honestly, he probably deserves some songwriting credits because he's. We'll bring in my song, and then he'll help Blake come up with a bass line.
There you go. Not bad. But I love the way that you refer to your sons as growing a rhythm section. Because you literally have your sons are with you in a band now, which I guess is the band that came after the Night of the Living Dead Poet Society, right?
Right. We were already starting to play when I was playing with Night of the Living Dead Poet Society.
Right. And so this was, how long have you guys been doing this now?
How long, Blake?
I don't know.
You got to step into the mic.
I have no idea.
At least a couple of years, though.
That's what I'm thinking, because I remember when I first caught wind of it. And I saw you guys play.
We did a house show. I saw you at a house show, and I'm trying to. It was called the Sinkhole Sanctuary. Last October.
That was last October, but prior to that, you were doing some other stuff.
Sure. We did some of those open mic nights at Nancy's. I remember seeing you there. Plug and play.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Now that I think about it, we started around the middle of when I was in third grade-ish, so about 3 years.
That's Blake,
3 years.
The bass player, just turned 12.
Yes, have a seat, Blake. Let's get your side of the story. So, Blake, you are the bass player.
Yes, that's correct.
And you actually got an old bass that belonged to me at one point that I did a custom job on, and you loved it. And when your dad saw that I was selling it, you were like, I want that bass.
Yes, that is a really good bass. I liked it, and whenever we do shows, that's usually the one I'm using.
Yes.
But when we were recording, I was using my dad's old bass.
Tobias Growler.
That's true. Tobias Growler.
So you said about 3 years now you guys have been doing this. Was it just an idea that your dad had and said, hey, let's go in the basement and just start jamming and see what happens?
Well, not exactly. Since we were little... Dad started having us take drum lessons, but, Owen was the only one that actually stuck with that.
Drumming came naturally.
And, with this guy named... John? Yeah, I think John was a guy named John taught, Owen.
John Gibbons, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
JB,
John Gibbons
okay.
At Kentucky Music.
Yes. I think he's taught half the town how to play drums at some point. So it just kind of came natural, though, right? I mean, you guys weren't forced into it. You wanted to do it.
Yes.
And so when the idea came about that you were going to, like, I'm assuming, Tom, did you have this, like, hey, let's start a band. Let's give it a name and start
recording.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, the first time we played was that talent show, and we didn't have a name.
Okay.
And we did even some open mics, and I think about it, we didn't have a name. So we just learned some songs and played them, and I don't know.
I think
it was just kind of it was fun.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, 3 years later, you're still doing it, and you've just completed your first record, which is perfect timing for this interview because it's going to be coming out or has been out at by the time this airs. Ooh. But this is a great time to plug it.
Yeah, I think it kind of started just like... when I was getting decent at bass, because I was really the last one of us to pick up an instrument and stick with it.
Well, I've seen you guys live, and it was really good. And I'll tell you what, when I was your age, I wish I was in a band like that, because I was like 15 by the time I was doing the stuff you guys are doing now. So, not much of a difference, but it is. It does make a difference as far as, you know, I guess maturity. You know, your skill level and all that stuff. You can't just pick up a guitar and walk on stage. You have to actually know something and be able to do something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can go up there and make noise, but everybody's going to leave. So you were the last one to kind of get into this.
Yeah, I started, and, well, Jared was more or less the first person to give me real lessons.
Right.
After my dad just showed me a little bit on it.
Well, it looks like you're doing pretty good, and you should be very proud of what you have achieved with this first album. To have an album at your age, I mean, that's a pretty big accomplishment, don't you think?
Yeah, and
you'll be very proud of it.
As Dad said, Jordan really is like a co-songwriter here. He just always knows a great bass line to go with it. Even with my dad's old songs, he'll come up with a better bass line for it just by seeing it.
Well, it doesn't hurt to have some helpful tips along the way, does it?
No, sir, it does not.
And you, sir, are the drummer.
Yeah, that's me.
And your name is?
Owen.
Owen.
Yeah.
And you've been drumming for how long now?
Let's see here. 7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
So most of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys already have like the full kit, the whole thing in your rehearsal space, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
We do everything in my dad's basement. We call it the chill station.
It's your basement too.
Yeah.
I have a feeling you're part of it. But how often, like, when the band started kind of taking off, did you all come up with some sort of schedule or have anything that you just kind of do it when it feels natural?
No, with one thing I love about this band is with other bands, you got to, like, make a Google schedule or whatever they're called. With this band, I just turn the PA on, and they'll be upstairs, and I say, come on down here, we're going to practice. So no schedule, just when I feel like it.
Yeah. Do you practice drums alone, or do you just kind of tinker around and then work with band or work with them when it's time?
Well, I normally only work with the bands, but I'm in the school band. I'm going to be in the marching band.
Excellent.
This year.
Obviously, some of the greatest drummers in history were marching drummers or band concert band drummers, you know. Good way to learn how to do the simple things, the easy things, you know.
Owen's going to band camp next week. He doesn't know what he's in for.
Yeah.
Band camp is exciting. You should be excited.
I'm pretty sure we're just going to learn how to march and stuff.
Probably. So. You're going to learn how to wear a uniform and stand out in the heat all day and hit things with a stick. Well, as a drummer, this is a good thing for me to relate to. Who are some of your influences?
My influence, John Bottom.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that the main one?
Yeah, definitely.
That's not a bad one to have. Do you practice a lot with Zeppelin records or just kind of listen and watch and learn?
I watched a YouTube video of John Bottom solos, just like his little fills, and I picked up some from that.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Not only is his style its own thing, but I think his tuning was very unique. The way he tuned his drums were not like anybody else, you know? It was more like I read an interview where he was a big Buddy Rich fan. Even though he didn't play like Buddy Rich, he was inspired by Buddy Rich as far as his attack and his tuning. And Buddy Rich tuned his drums really high. They were very, I don't know how to explain it, but there was something about the way he tuned his drums, and I think Bonham kind of learned that and developed his own way of doing that. So does stuff like that stand out to you yet, or are you just kind of still picking up like certain licks? And
I'm still picking them up for sure. So I used to not even know how to tune it, so I would just like tighten it as tight as it possible.
Until it pops.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, you're off to a good start, and obviously your dad's done a really good job of getting you guys involved in music too. And like you said, it was cool that you were such a late bloomer to it, but yet they got like thrown into it at such a young age. So it is kind of neat, like met right in the middle.
Real proud of these guys.
You should be proud.
This is the fourth time I've tried to record basically the same songs in an album with different bands.
Oh, really?
And it just never quite got finished before.
And then now it's like, when you finish eating dinner, we're going to go make a record, right? Do your chores, and then we can practice.
That's one of the chores.
That's really cool. So, Tom, tell me a little bit more about when the band actually became a band. Like, were you just in a spot where you were like, you know what? You guys are really into this. Do you want to give it a name? Do you want to start playing some shows?
I guess I thought of it as just a side project, you know, when I wasn't doing stuff with the Living Dead Poet Society. But then, you know, once Rebecca moved away and Colton moved on, it's like, well, I need a band, you know. Right. So let's
things just kind of fell into
this.
Place.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, we had some side projects, you know, just for fun in the basement, sure.
Right. But that is pretty cool. I mean, obviously a good way for them to just kind of be involved and watch and learn the things you've done, other people that have come maybe around. And I'm assuming they witnessed the other band practicing when they were younger.
They sure did. And I've taken them to all the all-ages shows I can around town.
Yeah.
And then I took them to their first stadium show a while ago. I think that had an impact. It was Poison. Def Leppard,
you guys
Tesla.
Got to see Poison? Yeah. I haven't seen Poison yet. I'm jealous. I was your age when Poison came out. I thought it was great.
Took him to see Billy Idol outdoors.
And that's cool.
That's closer to the style we're going for. You know,
true.
I call the genre dad punk. You know,
now I know you're a big fan of Iggy Pop.
Big fan of Iggy Pop. We got a cover on.
Yes,
the album.
You all actually do a cover of Iggy Pop, but. As a band, do the three of you kind of agree on the music styles and what you're influenced by? Or?
I've exposed them to a lot of the kind of music I like, but they're very independent minded.
Right. What are you into?
Some of my favorite bands are things like Iron Maiden. I have to say Poison and Kiss.
You were born in the wrong era. I'll tell you that. Owen, what are you into besides Zeppelin? Is there anything else that stands out to you?
Well, I really like Nirvana.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like their single Smells Like Teen Spirit a lot, and I listen to that in my free time. So.
Well, you're going to love Incesticide when you get around to hearing that record.
True.
Because
yeah,
that one's got,
one.
As a drummer, it's got Dale Crover from the Melvins and Dave Grohl on the same record. You need to get that.
We'll get that today while we're at a record store.
And Chad Channing, or is it Channing?
I think that's right.
Channing. So it's got like...
He's on Bleach also.
It's got the three drummers of Nirvana's like pinnacle time. So that's a great record. You'll learn a lot from that one. And obviously, like I said with you, I know you love Iggy Pop. What else are you... I know you share a lot of stuff on Facebook of just random YouTube videos of bands and things. You're really, really good at that, especially like the underground stuff. You know? So get deep with me on musically what you're into.
I mean, my all-time favorite bands are T-Rex, the Velvet Underground, and the Stooges.
And a lot of that goes into you as a singer-songwriter, correct?
Right, sure. So I like your proto-punk, I guess, but also I like what you call singer-songwriter style. Yeah. I mean, Leonard
Cohen.
You're
not ripping it off, but it's definitely a heavy influence.
He's talking about Iron Maiden, and you know, I love bands like that. They have technical proficiency, but not having that, I feel like I have the ability to play with passion and commitment, to play and sing with passion and commitment. And so a lot of the artists I learn from are ones that do that. You know, Lou Reed, I don't think is a virtuoso musician. Leonard Cohen isn't at all.
No, they were just good at what they did.
Right, and they got so passion and commitment. So
Stood Alone, it was very original, and you know there was no cookie cutter thing there. I mean, those guys were very much original and invented.
And I gotta say something about Bowie. I mean, what I like about David Bowie is how he keeps reinventing himself, or did. I mean, you know, like
I was gonna say, yeah, he's still doing it.
the theater of it, you know, the creating characters. I really admire that. You know, coming from creative writing, you know, that's.
Right. I thought the last video he did for his final record, like he knew what was happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And man,
it's
hard to watch that video.
Yeah, really powerful.
But he was so brilliant at combining art and music with reality. And I mean, just it's mind-blowing now to look back on it. But I think like a lot of things, when musicians die, you see another side that you never. It's almost like you take it for granted.
Sure, that was when that's alive. The Kurt Cobain phenomenon. Is
for
how
a
I think
lot of
it,
people,
I mean.
Yeah. But I get the Bowie thing that you're referencing because I wasn't a big fan. I mean, I liked it, but I wasn't a big fan. And of course, when he died, it's like I start listening because everybody's posting stuff. It's like it's hard not to watch the videos.
And so. he's very influential. You know, Mott the Hoople wouldn't have got. They were about to get call it quits, as I understand it, and then he gave them All the Young Dudes.
Oh, yeah.
Became their
right.
big hit.
I think I've read about that.
And he helped out Iggy Pop's career a lot. Mm-hmm. Even Lou Reed, you know, David Bowie really rubbed off on him.
Right.
So he's a real central figure for
so
the
you,
kinds of music
you
I like.
You definitely have a large amount of influence in you alone. And it, obviously in your household, it's available to you guys, and you have access to your dad's record collection and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean,
sometimes I
can't
make
really
listen,
go wrong with that.
I make him listen to specific things sometimes. Like, Blake really likes to play fast, but I've been trying to get him to listen to, like, the Melvins, you know?
Yeah.
Because so, I want him to learn slow heavy, you know? It doesn't have right. to be fast to be heavy.
Slow and intense right. is just as good as fast and heavy.
Well, it is good to have dad's just all of his CDs around. I can listen to one if I want. I can just do that. And, because he got a new CD player, I got his old one. And
the old hand-me-down CD player.
Yeah. Now I have a few CDs of my own that sometimes I just listen to them in my room.
Well, you guys, you should be very proud to be this man's sons, you know, because you're on the right path. He's definitely put you on the right path of music and quality and, you know, taste in music and all that stuff. And he's not forcing it on you. That's what's cool. It's just there, you know, and you kind of fell into it and you liked it too, right?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
I could tell. So I have seen you guys perform and it was really cool. And I think the whole room was kind of impressed because a lot of what you know, Tom, I think when you see kids walk on stage at something, you're like, oh man, this is gonna be kind of, you know,
people keep
decent.
Saying asking if we're like the Partridge Family, you know, nothing against them, you know, I love their logo on their drum kit and their bus, and what's her name, Susan Day was obviously hot, but right. we're doing a whole different style, you know, we want to rock harder,
right? Well, and that you do, but I just always think that when a certain crowd might see children walk onto a stage, that they're gonna immediately judge it as they're going to play wrong notes. They're not going to be very good. This is not the case with you guys. You walked on stage, and I was at the Sinkhole Sanctuary for the Halloween party, and I've talked about this in other episodes. You guys came out, and it was like the whole room was like, wow, that's a punk rock band. You know, that's the real deal.
Right on.
But yet the sound and all of the influences, in my opinion, I can pick it out. I can tell. You know, and it was just really cool. So after 3 years, like you said, of this kind of starting and evolving and becoming where you stand today, you guys decided to go to Jared at Nightmare House and record an album. Is it an EP or an album?
It's an EP. It's only six songs.
Six songs. Okay. So you've got an EP coming out. When does it come out?
So we should have copies of the actual CD next Friday or so. So okay. That'd be the 19th.
So it's the mid-July.
Right. And it's available on Spotify and iTunes now.
Right. And that's what's important about, because whenever this airs, you know. But you've got some shows coming up for 2019, right?
Yeah, the only one I know of so far is September 7 at Little Fox Bakery.
Okay. But you'll probably have more.
Yeah, we hope to.
So going in to record this, what was the plan? What was the goal? I mean, is it all original or all covers? Like what
five originals and one cover. And
perfect
for me, what it really was is, you know, I just wanted to get these songs recorded so I could think of them as finished. So I think it'll help me write new songs, you know what I mean? I maybe haven't written a new song in a little while,
right?
And I just felt like getting these finished would be a path towards like getting started on seeing what's next.
You always want to put down one thing so you can move on.
Finish a project before you start another one, I guess.
Right.
But
exactly.
It was a lot of fun recording with Jared, and I think it was a good experience for the boys being in the studio.
Right. Obviously, that was your all's first experience in a recording studio, right?
Yes.
So what was it like for you to experience that? Did you learn the differences between rehearsals and live shows and the almost like movie making quality of being in a recording studio and doing parts and being perfectionist kind of thing?
Well, yeah. So when we're just jamming, you know, in the basement, we can like try new stuff and stuff. But, you know, when we're actually recording, you know, it's the real deal.
Right.
So we have to be ready for it.
And you were definitely ready, right?
Yeah.
You walked in there with a game plan and knew everything you were going to do. Did you use his equipment or did you play on your own stuff?
I brought my snare, but everything else was his.
You know, the drum kit you played on has a history. That drum set belonged to Josh Riddle, who was with the Lost River Cavemen.
Oh, okay. The one at Jared's. Cool.
Yeah, the one at Jared's. And then it had something else to it. But if you pull up Josh Riddle's Sound Atlas, he tells the story about that drum kit and how it ended up in Jared's studio. So the drum kit you recorded on has got some Bowling Green music scene history to it.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
So what was your experience like in the studio, Blake?
Well, I actually had to use a bass that was studio quality.
Right, because the BC Rich Warlock is not very studio quality.
Well, it's great for punk shows, but it's just a big fat no for studios.
It's about capturing good sound and tone. You don't want hissing and dead strings and all that stuff.
Yeah, in fact, the bass had a small problem when we were there, which is why we started using the one that was more studio quality.
So do I need to work on it?
No.
It was a grounding issue, but now we think maybe we just had the volume down. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Well, I can always rewire it if I need to.
No.
It's a guarantee. Since you bought it off of me, I have to be on standby to fix my old bass. But that's cool. Did you enjoy the process? Did you all use like a click track, or did you just record live? How did you go about doing everything?
We recorded live and spent the whole first day just getting the drum parts right.
Right.
And then we played all the other parts over that. So we played live to get the drum parts down.
So the typical studio scenario of
I don't know.
Drums first. Well, I mean, some bands can go in and cut live and then just do some minor overdubs and punch-ins and stuff. But I always thought drums first and then everything else afterwards.
Yeah, I think it took 2 days, and then Owen wasn't even with us on the second day.
Okay.
We got all the drums down that first day.
Yeah, the day without Owen, it was just we had to do every song 3 times so that he could get all the things. And I had to do 2 instruments there. Dad had to do vocals and guitar.
Right.
Blake plays trombone in school band, and he had a trombone solo in one of the songs.
That's awesome.
At the very beginning, just as an introduction.
Dude, that's really cool, because when you're able to do multiple instruments on a track, it's like you're cloning yourself, you know?
It's the only way
to clone yourself.
I actually started the trombone because it is a bass instrument.
Yeah.
It does that, and I thought it would make it easier to learn how to read music, the notes. I thought it would make it a lot easier to do all that, so I started trombone at school bands.
That's cool. And it kind of helped guide you in the path of music and, you know, the vibe of what music requires and all that stuff.
And I really liked it because you could, like, play extra things over what you already had.
Yes.
So, like, I could play my drums, but then I can also put, like, a little thing in there, you know?
Right. I've always thought it was cool to add, like, accents to, like, the chorus with a shaker or a tambourine or something like that. It just adds, like, an enhancement thing. It'll give the song a little pickup.
Also, like, special effects, you might call them. I mean, in our song, Let's Get the Cops Called, got a police siren playing over the second guitar solo, and there's a officer that speaks during the outro.
That's cool. Right, and as we're taping this, that just was released this past week.
Correct.
And so you've got your first single out. So Dr. Tom and the Mini-Me's is official on the airwaves now. Are you getting it out to local radio, or have you looked at
that? Yeah, we will. I mean, Manly Pointer got a lot of airplay, so and I feel like we're a lot better. So I'm pretty confident that at least one of those songs will get some airtime. I kind of want to wait for the CD.
And once the CD is done and in your hands, I'm assuming it'll be right here in this very room at Mellow Matt's Music
and
More.
Maybe so.
And maybe Matt will get you guys in here to do like a CD release party.
We'd love that, yeah.
I totally just hooked you up. Me and Matt, we're like close.
Yeah.
Well, guys, before we wrap this up, tell me about what you want to see happen with this band. And obviously, nobody can quit. Because then you have to move out, right?
Well, we got to at least change the name if somebody quits. I can't get anybody else to be a mini-me. We've had some people, you know, play with us as guest musicians.
Right.
We can't be part of the band unless we change our name.
Exactly. But this is really the band. I mean, you guys, the three of you, have really got a strong thing together and have built a really cool thing off of just an idea that just kind of happened, right?
That's right. Their brother Evan is the ultimate roadie. He really is good at putting things back exactly
right.
how they were. And
that's awesome.
So there's him too, but we're the musicians in the band.
Yeah, you can't forget the behind the scenes people are just as important. So your brother helps out, huh?
Yes, Evan helps out with the roadie. He helps us carry the amps into Little Fox Bakery and stuff like that.
The mini road crew. I'm pretty sure I saw him at Sinkhole that night, right? He was
definitely
helping you guys pack
in
and out.
That's right.
That's what I thought. Well, when did you have an official date for the record, or did you already say that?
I think we're going to have we're going to have copies in hand, we think, on July 19 of the
okay,
CD, but
right.
it's already available as of July 12 on Spotify and iTunes and Apple Store and Amazon.
Okay, so Dr. Tom and the Mini-Me's, you've got a Facebook page.
That's right.
Are you on anything else, or just as far as, like you said, Apple, Spotify?
The album's available in all those places.
Right.
99 cents a track or $5.94 for the full album.
There you go.
And then... yeah, we do our Facebook page. The album's called Let's Get the Cops Called.
Yes. And you might.
We hope to.
I mean, I wouldn't encourage it, but you might. But if you play at proper venues, the cops will not be called.
That's a house party show is what I wrote that one for, is to kind of mess with the head of whoever's hosting the
That's
house
true.
Show.
And that's a cool thing. And you guys, obviously, will get to do a lot of that kind of stuff because of your age and everything. But I would assume you wouldn't have any problem getting in certain venues. Because, you know, the rule is they can be on stage, but they can't
hang
out.
Rocky said we could play there, but it's after our bedtime.
That's true. Rocky's is late.
One time, Dad actually did have the cops called on him when he was with the Night of the Living Dead Poet Society.
Yeah.
But he just kept playing his song, and the officer dismissed it and told them to keep on rocking.
Was this at home?
No, that was, we were playing at Toby and Amanda's house. The Foya house.
Yes.
And, they had a...
Well, the cops were across the street.
Right. Well, they had some, I forgot what it was called, but they had registered, so they were allowed to have shows, but Toby lost track of what time it was, and the thing said, you know, they had to be done by 10:30. It was after midnight or whatever.
It is a sound.
I think it was actually on stage with the cartoons, Dr. Tom and the cartoons. We were going to just do one song, and the cops showed up. So we had to wait, and we played when they left.
They just walked across the street and told you to quit playing, right? Well, guys, it was a pleasure having you on the Sound Atlas. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
And I'm glad that we were able to capture it at this moment in time because the album's just been recorded. You've got some good things coming up around the time that this will actually air.
This is our moment. They're not going to be mini-me's much longer, you know?
Yeah, pretty soon it'll be Dr. Tom and his big sons.
They're going to be so good, I'm going to be kicked out of the band. I know that.
I don't see that happening. But Dr. Tom and the Mini-Me's, Blake and Owen, thank you guys so much for joining me. And good luck to what you do. And I hope that we get to team up and do a show together.
Nice. Awesome.
You want to see that happen?
Yeah. See us as a band in 5 years.
In 5 years, we're going to be done. Well, okay, we'll do it sooner then.
When you look back, when you're older and listen to this thing years from now, you're going to love it.
Thanks, Dean.
Thank you.
You're